Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Captain.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
And coming to you remote from Florida, Mark Edge.
Mark, being in Florida, is sort of laughing at us all in the Northeast.
Or even, yeah, I hear your weather's really nice right now.
Or even the North. And, like, my response to that is, the biggest hurdle that freedom-minded people have to overcome is snow. like to make the movement happen, to get people to come to New Hampshire to, like, you know, rally for more freedom, at least in one state out of 50. You know, like for whatever reason. And it's like, I'm telling you, we got dumped on today, like more than a foot of snow. Ooh. And like, yeah, seriously, like overnight, right? And I was up late last night because I was doing things. And like, even late last night, 2 a.m, whatever, I looked out and I'm like, ah, it's just a dusting. It'll be fine, right? I woke up at, I don't know, 10 or something this morning and like, oh, well over a foot of snow, right? Now, I own a snowblower, right? And the joke, of course, is what did the snowman say that made him pull, or what did the snow, why did the snowman pull down his pants? It's because he saw the snowblower coming down the driveway.
Indeed.
But, like, my snowblower decided not to work today, right? I think I gummed up the carburetor. I probably didn't, like, you know, store it appropriately, or it's been too long since I changed the gas. It was kind of a mild snow winter here in New Hampshire for the most part. So, anyway, I go to fire it up. It's like, no, screw you, Captain. I'm not going to fire. So, me and my shovel became friends again after some years of being, you know, not acquainted, right? Like, and it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't, I got some exercise. Oh, darn, you know, like around here we have plows and like, you know, that kind of a thing. Society has decided, albeit government funded, that like, you know, plows are a thing and they're necessary to keep the wheels of commerce rolling or whatever, right? So, you know, the plows are rolling, the de-icers are de-icing, and it, like, in any other place that I've lived, let me rephrase that. In any other place that doesn't regularly have winter that I've lived, i.e. Seattle, Washington, like in Seattle, they freak out, man. If you get like an inch of snow, it's the snowpocalypse. That's their word for every year.
Wasn't snow falling on cedars written about the Seattle area?
I'm not familiar with that publication.
Okay, it won some award back 30 years ago.
Okay.
Snow falling on cedars.
I was in Seattle in, I moved there in 96, so I think it was either that year or the next year, or maybe it was 98, I'm not sure, but one of those early or late 90s years where they had record snowfall. They got like a foot or something like that. And I remember the worst thing that happened out there was, there was one of these tandem buses. That's where it's like a regular city bus that is like, has this like accordion kind of thing. And then it's got like another half bus behind it. Like one of them like slid down like a hill. And there's some pretty good video footage of that that keeps getting repeated every time Seattle gets snow. and then the other thing was there are many boat marinas in the Seattle area. And like the marina roofs covering these boats, supposedly protecting them from things like rain and snow, were not strong enough to withstand the record amount of snowfall. And so I remember seeing footage of like these marina roofs collapsing on top of $1 million, $2 million yachts, stuff like that, right? You know, so like people losing their boats basically is what I'm getting at. But that was like the worst of it, right? And like, I grew up in Wisconsin, so I'm not unfamiliar with the snow protocol, right? I'm not unfamiliar with salting the roads, all that kind of stuff. And I get out to Seattle, and everybody's freaking out in the snow. I remember I had to go to a job interview the first year that I moved there, 96, and I drove a front-wheel drive 1985 Chevy Citation up this giant hill. By just counter-steering back and forth, it took me, I don't know, it should have taken like a minute to get up this hill. It took me 8 minutes to get up this hill. But, like, I did it because I know how to drive in snow, and apparently nobody else did. I made it from what's known as West Seattle into downtown Seattle to this office building that, you know, I just assumed would be open. But it was not.
I think that New Hampshire's best for people who, A, are a little concerned about moving out of the United States. Now, I've got to say, I don't entirely understand, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only giving my advice here. You know, the United States has its sort of feel to it. It's becoming more and more homogenized, sadly.
Yeah.
I prefer it. I prefer the idea that, you know, the Northeast is different than the Southeast and, you know, those sorts of things. But whatever the case may be, I think that Prospera would be more for people who want to live free. And New Hampshire's more for people who want to save America. And
interesting.
You know, New Hampshire, you're going to have to fight. As soon as Prospera has that first open condominium, which should be June, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess. New Hampshire will no longer be the sort of freest place you can move to and live as a Westerner. In which case, then New Hampshire's going to have to fight for every little bit more of freedom that it can get. And I think that's a good thing.
Oh, my gosh. Competition in a marketplace? Are you kidding me? Like, of course it's a good thing.
Yep, it's a great thing. So essentially, that's what the idea is. And I think that a lot of people don't understand that freedom is boring. That a lot of people want to be upset about politics and, you know, those sorts of things. And if that's what you want, then, you know, you can, as a libertarian, New Hampshire gives you something to do, you know.
You want to argue with people? Yeah, come to New Hampshire.
It gives us something to talk about on Free Talk Live.
that's hilarious and true. Like, I'm not saying it's not true, but like the reason it's hilarious is because there's, you know, an element of truth, of course, to what you're saying. And so, like, I mean, to be honest, and I've told other co-hosts and you know, friends that I've made since I've moved to New Hampshire in, has it been 5 years? 2019?
Yeah, seems like it might be.
Wow, half a decade ago. That, like, New Hampshire wasn't the only place that I considered moving to when I considered moving, but it was just a place that, like, Free Talk Live was here, the Free State Project was here, there was a large libertarian community here already, and I thought to myself, if I move to one of these other places, right, Mexico or Chile or, you know, I had a list of places, right, 5-6 places on my list. Like, if I go to one of these other places first, I'm going to regret not coming to New Hampshire first. And so I came here. And, well, next thing you know, I'm on this show and 5 years go by.
Yeah. Right. You own some property. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, like, you know, and like, I'm in a, I don't know, like, amongst the Liberty people, I feel like, even like everybody in the Liberty community in New Hampshire is a unique individual. One of the things I love about the people that I've met is that, like, man, these people are unique and quirky and have, you know, individual things about them that make them different from other people. And like the variety of personalities and, you know, even philosophies are just so vast that I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the real melting pot, or at least as far as I'm concerned, right? America, when I was going to school, right, was like, oh, we're the melting pot of society, as I grew up in, like, basically a white suburban neighborhood, right? You know, and I'm like, well, I don't really see much of a melting pot around me, you know? But as I traveled and got to know the United States better, I was like, oh yeah, there really is, like, vast differences in cultures and in all that kind of thing, depending on where you go. And so, like, I get here and I'm like, oh, it's even more stark. That contrast is just beyond anything I've ever experienced in my life. And so that's what I love about having come here and been here for 5 years now, is that I have met so many unique individuals that, like, I mean, I'm into things that they don't know about, but they're into things that I don't know about. And so we all have so much to learn from each other regarding our own lives, our own experiences, and that kind of a thing, and how we got to the philosophies of freedom. Before we went to break, I talked about how you could lose your $400,000 home over a $1,600 tax bill. And that sounds weird to most people because they're like, you know, maybe my home is only worth $300,000. How do I, you know, how does one go about losing your house over $1,600?
Sounds like a, sounds like they should be sending some letters or something. You can't take somebody's house over $1,600, right?
Oh, but they can. And by they, I mean the government, of course. Despite a 2022 Supreme Court ruling, people are losing their property over tax bills that amount to a fraction of their home value and the built-up equity. Mark, are you in a place where you have a door to close or something? I hear background noise that, okay. You know, I'm not sure what's going on there. This from, where is it from? The Epoch Times, E-P-O-C-H, Epoch, Tucson, Arizona. Horses taunt Christine Searle the importance of being fair, intelligent, and innately honest creatures. Horses apparently know deceit when they see it, and Christine wishes they could teach that principle to the state of Arizona. The 70-year-old horse trainer and Arizona native is on the verge of losing her life savings over an unpaid $1,607.68 property tax bill. Quote, "I owed them money, and that's what they should get, the money I owe them," Ms. Searle told the Epoch Times. "I don't think they should have the right to take all of it." And, Mark, clearly you agree. I agree. Most of our listeners are thinking to themselves, what the heck? $1,600 and they're going to take her house? Arizona is one of the almost dozen states that allow creditors to keep all the proceeds from sales of homes foreclosed due to unpaid taxes, known as tax lien sales, according to the Pacific Legal Foundation.
Yeah, that's crazy. If you owe $1,600 and they sell your house at an auction, now, first off, I wouldn't sell my house at an auction because I don't feel like I get the right price. But
right.
Nonetheless.
Let's just say you get fair market price.
If they force this situation, right, like you owe the tax bill, it's been like 10 years or something, and you're just like the only way they're going to get their money is by selling the house, and they finally take it to auction. Then they keep all the money from the auction,
right,
and you only owed $1,600, whatever that amount is. Say it's $100,000 more, could be more, could be less. It really depends on where it is. That's just robbery.
I mean, like, libertarians, of course, are very familiar with the phrase taxation is theft. This is theft of a whole different degree. This goes back to, I remember watching, I think it was Aaron Russo doing a feature film about, I think it was called Freedom to Fascism in the, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s, something like that.
Oh, I think that movie was premiered in the early aughts.
Okay, well, whatever. I remember watching it only because, like, Aaron Russo isn't the most... svelte man, or wasn't.
Oh, no, he's not.
At the time. But yet he was wearing like a skin tight, like Elvis looking suit for this movie. And so it makes it like the presentation is, the content is awesome. But like you're looking at it, you're like, why is this like obviously like middle-aged overweight guy wearing a skin tight suit on television? And like we still have no answer for that.
2006.
Okay, very well.
I just remember where I saw it.
A 2022 U.S. Supreme Court case out of Minnesota that we talked about here on Free Talk Live previously offers some hope to property owners in these specific situations. We're talking about things like, what do they call it? Civil asset forfeiture, right, is generally the terminology used for when government takes your land, right? But if only a similar case is brought in their state, concerning Minnesota. In the 2022 case, the justices ruled that Minnesota's practice of keeping all of the proceeds of a tax sale constitutes an illegal seizure of property. this makes sense to most people, right? Like, oh, I've got a $400,000 house. Oh, you know, there's some taxes that haven't been paid, $1,600 in this case. You know, what must I do to resolve this? Oh, if I pay the $1,600, we're good, right? No, not according to many other state laws.
Right. This should absolutely be outlawed. I don't care if it's – I don't – you know, I'm no lawyer. I'm no Supreme Court justice. I don't know which organization, whether it's the feds or each individual state, should do it. But this is outright insane to let a municipality benefit by selling a house for an unpaid tax bill.
For a minute unpaid tax bill. Right.
Right? Well, like, what if it was $1?
Right.
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 So all they're going to do is all it does is incentivize them to find the people out of power, make sure that they don't pay a tax bill. You know, whoops, looks like there's a clerical error here and you didn't pay a dollar. And it's now gone past the 3 or 5 years, whatever it is.
Right.
The line is, and now we get to sell your house. Come on, people. Like, this isn't, I don't know what this is, but this is crap.
Most libertarians and even most voluntarists believe that property rights come down to your ability to defend that property.
Sure.
And if that is the case, then the rightful owners of that property are the state, because they are capable of defending it. You are not. If on
that's the might makes right philosophy,
it
right?
It sure is, Mark. It sure is, and it is what most people believe. And if that's the case, then they have every right to tax you. If, on the other hand, property comes not from the ability to force that on others, which is fundamentally what defense is, is the ability to force this set of rules on others and them not force any set of rules on you. Now, if it comes not from that, but from I mixed my labor with nature at some point, and other people mixed their labor with nature at some point, and then we traded and gifted until we reached this point where this is the rightful owner of this, that, and the other, well, then they have no right to tax. No government has any right to tax anyone.
You're getting into some very interesting philosophical discussions about property. Like, on one hand, from a person who had never owned property, and by owned, I mean, like, I don't even own the property that I have because I got to pay rent to the state, so whatever. But, like, as a person who had never even delved into this construct that we have here in the United States known as property ownership, right? That's the term it's given in legalese until recently, until I moved here. I sort of always bought into the philosophy of the Native Americans, which is no one owns planet Earth, right? You cannot own physically a plot of land that is 1 acre or 5 acres or whatever. You can live on a piece of property that is that large, and you can farm a piece of property that is, you know, larger than that, or you can defend a piece of property.
Well,
that's
now hold
that
on,
large.
Though.
But like,
now,
but like,
if you farm that property, though, you own those crops, right?
Correct.
Okay, so then someone can't come along and be like, I'm going to take the dirt from these crops.
Correct.
Right.
In the same way that, like, if I'm a Native American and I found, like, a tree, or, like, they used to do this for real. They would find a small seedling tree, and they would bend it in a certain way and tie it so that it grew in a bent way, and then when it reached maturity, they would chop it down and make a bow out of that for their bow and arrow. Right? So this actually happened. Now, that's mixing your labor with nature to create an item that, like, I don't think anyone on planet Earth would be like, no, Captain, if you did all that work, that's not yours. Right?
Indeed.
Everyone on planet Earth would be like, oh, wow, you went to great lengths to accomplish this.
Well, I wouldn't go with everyone on planet Earth. I mean,
you know,
I wouldn't even go with the majority, because they would ask the question, whose land was that on?
Fair question.
And ultimately, what they are fundamentally asking is which state entity gave who permission to use that spot of land.
Right. And so the unrecognition of state entities being able to, or even individuals for that matter, anyone, doesn't matter what you call yourself or your organization, right? I bought into the fact that, like, no humans, no organization of humans, no organization of animals actually owns planet Earth. Planet Earth owns us, right? If you want to look at it in an ownership capacity, right? Planet Earth owns us. When planet Earth is tired of human beings, watch out. We're done, right? When planet Earth is like, you guys have gone too far, you're done. Planet Earth will take us out in seconds, far easier than any tyrant would have ever thought it could be done, right? So, like, in that respect, I kind of, I don't know what the right word, I don't want to say sympathize, but I kind of respect the philosophy of the Native Americans where they're like, it's like planet Earth is not a thing that
I still think you're falling into that sense of property where it's who has the power. And it's not a question of does the Earth have the power to eliminate humans? It is a question, did the Earth put in labor to make us? Did we get cultivated by our environment? And I would say yes. So in that sense, you know, if we were to establish that the Earth itself had agency, then I would say, yeah, we are the Earth's property. Because if it has agency, then this clearly doesn't look like a mistake to me. This doesn't look like an accident. This looks like it was intentional and very, very well thought out.
I think humans exist on planet Earth intentionally, right? As a result of nature going, what should we do next, right? Evolution, if you will, in my opinion, is nature going, how do we make Earth better? The states that are currently most able to sell your home out from under you should you owe some amount of tax money that is unpaid are Alabama, Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, and South Dakota. There are others. Those are just like the most, like the states where this is most applicable. And she happens to be in Arizona. A county treasurer can place a lien on property for taxes owed in Arizona. These financial claims are then sold at an online auction. In the auction, buyers bid the lowest interest rate they intend to charge property owners to redeem the lien. The bidding begins at 16%, and the lowest bid wins. Now, I don't know about everyone else, but I bought my property in 2020, and I got, you know, way less than 16% interest on my mortgage. So, like, to me, that's just rape.
Yeah.
Like, that interest rate is insane. That's the beginning interest rate is 16. It could go up from there.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't go lower, according to this article.
Well, it just goes to show that really what she should have done is borrow money from a different mafia to pay off this mafia, and then she would still have her house.
The multi-mafia effect, you say?
I mean, sure, they might charge 30% interest, but they'll only charge it on the $16,000. Instead of the $400,000.
You mean 1600?
Yeah, sorry, 1600.
Okay. Purchasing a tax lien doesn't transfer ownership of the property in Arizona. The property owner has 3 years to pay back the taxes, which includes fees and interest. If it is not redeemed within that time, the lien holder may foreclose and sell the property. Unsold tax liens are turned over to the state. The state has the same right to foreclose, but must return any excess proceeds to the former property owner. In 2005, Ms. Searle bought a three-bedroom, two-bath house as a rental property for $255,000. The house is in Gilbert, Arizona, 22 miles southeast of Phoenix. Its 2024 property tax appraisal came to $376,800, but she stands to lose much more than the taxable value. Various real estate websites estimate the current market value to sit somewhere between $420,000 and $510,000. Far more than, you know, what the...
$1,600.
Yeah. The investment firm Arapahoe LLC Tesco purchased the tax lien on Ms. Searle's property when it bought all of Maricopa County's 2015 and 2016 tax liens. Wait. If I read this correctly, I didn't know this until now, or it didn't sink in until now, that there are companies that purchase tax liens?
Mm-hmm.
And they just buy all?
Oh, yeah.
Like this company apparently bought
whatever they can get.
All.
Yeah.
Of Maricopa County's 2015 and 2016 tax liens. They're like, ah, you know what? Anybody that owes some taxes this year, we'll buy them all.
Yeah. Like, what I mean, it's a great deal.
What a good deal.
Yeah,
for them.
They get to pay this little amount, and if you can't pay off that lien, then it's just, I mean, almost free property for them.
Almost. Arapahoe stands to gain a significant profit if it sells the property under current law. Arapahoe's contact information was not available. An internet search showed that the Phoenix company, which is involved in a number of legal actions in Arizona, lists Hamilton Municipal Financing of Altamonte Springs, Florida, as a principal. Hamilton is incorporated in Delaware. Well, I mean, we know how these things work. Like, people incorporate in New Hampshire all the time for certain, you know, benefits, or they're trying to avoid a tax of this nature or the other nature. Same thing with Delaware.
No, that is literally the only thing I know about Delaware. It's unfortunately apparently a part of the human makeup that until it is forced upon you as a problem, we just don't do anything about any of these huge problems that exist.
We, Mark, you'll know this, and you too, Peakless. We've talked many times about what is the thing that wakes people up out of their statism into libertarian anarchism, you know, voluntarism, whatever that is, right? Right. What is it that, like, we can't find, and I still can't find, like, a rhyme or a reason to it, with the exception of people who have been wronged by the state.
Mm.
Right?
That certainly helps. Well, so here's one fact that is really important to note. Somewhere around 85%. Some people say higher numbers. Some people say lower numbers. I think it's a spectrum, but I like the number 85. Somewhere around 85% of people generally, this is not Americans, it's people on the planet, value social cohesion, group cohesion, people being happy with each other over the truth.
Ooh.
Fact.
And
ooh,
there are people who run towards the end of that little thing, people like, you know, hosts of Free Talk Live, right? Where
right.
We value the truth over making people happy.
Right.
Some of us, sadly, value making people unhappy over the truth, but, you know, nonetheless. And that's kind of the first thing I would say about it, is as far as what it takes to make somebody a libertarian. The second thing I...
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Well, so, I mean, with that one, it's really just a question of in what time frame, because, like, if you want people to be happy with each other now, this second, this quarter, this week, then the truth really doesn't matter all that much. If you want people to get along for any sustained period of time, then the truth is absolutely indispensable.
I hear you.
And that's really the difference, is what's your time structure?
I hear you, and I think that politicians attempt – I don't think they do this intentionally, but I think they attempt to balance sort of the truth of it all and the making people happy thing. So if you wanted –
No. I disagree completely. I think politicians are trying to give you some version of those two things in order to benefit themselves.
I can think of literally two people that you know, as far as like national politics goes, that I think the truth has ever crossed their mind. And that's Thomas Massey and Ron Paul.
Well, every politician knows that if they raised the minimum wage to $100 an hour and they printed a whole bunch of money and inflated everything, that people would be very happy in the short term and that they would get elected the next go around.
Mm-hmm.
But, they would probably get themselves in big trouble to go around after that. They know they can't just, you know, totally nosedive the economy for their own benefit.
$1,000 an hour minimum wage.
Right. So
yeah, I was going to say $100's actually pretty reasonable at this point. I mean, like that is literally only a fourfold increase of like the the going political movement right now.
25?
Yeah, yeah. 25
I haven't
is
heard
the
25.
Yeah, no, that's the current.
That's the new one.
Yeah, that is the current push for minimum wage.
Like, what do you think a person at McDonald's is making in New Hampshire right now?
Jack squat.
You know, well, what I mean is dollars per hour.
Oh, probably 15 bucks. Yeah, probably 15.
I was thinking 20, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
Somewhere in between there. Okay, so let's go 16.50.
Okay.
Yeah, and fun fact, we have no state minimum wage. We only have the federal minimum wage to worry about.
And no one makes that here.
No one makes
that. As I can tell.
Literally no one.
There is not a job. I mean, maybe right. There's like a waitress position where it makes the minimum and then the rest is tips.
Right.
But like overall, if you work a 40-hour week, you're certainly not making minimum wage and that's all of your income.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
What we now have is, you know, socialists running as a Democratic Party, and people who will be equivalent to the Democratic Party in 10 years, right? Like they're just 10 years behind the Democratic Party is mm-hmm. what the Republican Party is.
Socialists driving the speed limit.
Right. You know, that's what you got. So the whole thing is socialism.
Yes.
Cultural Marxism,
well,
whatever you want to call
well,
it.
No. Whole thing is socialism. Republicans and Democrats are both socialists.
No, I don't think so.
No, they are. They just argue about how to spend everybody else's money differently.
Well, so the Republicans and some of the Democrats have fought for the nominal right to own property. Now, they both want the government to tell you what to do with that property. And that makes them fascists,
right.
Not socialists.
I mean,
there is a difference.
In that particular slice, sure, I'll agree with you. But the overall picture is they're both socialists because
right.
they keep supporting the socialism that is the United States of America.
Well, and ironically, we have achieved a truly communist and Marxist system through fascism in our central bank.
So disgusting to
yeah.
think about that.
See, having a central bank is one of the pillars of Marxist communism. And we have achieved this through our corporations.
Yeah.
So,
Mark, what was the second thing? Like you mentioned the first thing was
yep.
the 85%. What was the other thing that wakes people up?
The other thing that I would say is that this town that I've talked about previously, this housing development
Prospera?
Called Morazan.
Oh,
Morazan.
Okay.
What's that? Housing development.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's called Morazan. It's in Chiloma, Honduras. And it is essentially a special economic zone that's privately owned by a libertarian billionaire who can basically set all his own rules. And people willingly move there. They're treated with dignity there. They're able to own a home that is not a tin shack there. And they're, you know, kids are able to take normal showers and, you know, everything that you would imagine is sort of a modern home. A cheap one, but, you know, it's clean and it's well constructed.
Inexpensive, not cheap, right?
Inexpensive, right. That's a better term. And these people essentially are operating in a libertarian system and they act libertarian. Now, let me give you a couple of examples, because what does acting libertarian mean?
Acting genius, thank you.
It means what? It means essentially not initiating force against your neighbor in order to solve your problems. But I think most people don't generally. But what happens if we sort of take them out of the old paradigm, these antiquated encumbrances that we call government now, and we go to something that is faster, more nimble, and more fair? So this is, and it's important to note, this is Chiloma, Honduras is the most violent city, or at least was in the recent past, in a country that was, in the recent past, the most violent country on Earth that wasn't a war zone.
Very recently,
so,
yeah.
So the country the most violent, and then the city even more violent because it's the most violent within that territory.
Correct. So let's just call this a pretty darned violent place for a place that's not at war. And this housing development, essentially, all they did, put up a 10-foot wall, and they got to like 7, 8, 9, 10 security guards that keep everybody safe. And they had a violent incident a few months ago where a man decided to push his wife up against the wall while arguing at a party. They have parties every weekend there. They love piñatas. By the way, piñatas, not Honduran, but they love them nonetheless. And
what are the piñatas filled with in
candy.
Honduras? Same thing as, okay, all right, just checking. Yeah. I was is it like joints? Is it like, you know?
How
not
libertarian
kind of
are we talking here?
All right. Anyway, continue.
Our piñatas will be filled with drugs and AK-47s.
At least some ammunition or something. Right? Anyway,
that might not be the best choice for something you're going to whack with a stick. Just thinking that.
I didn't mean to interrupt your you were on a roll. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Right. So basically, the security guards stopped this incident, and they, you know, wanted to know what to do. The guy who runs the place came up with a solution. He talked to the woman to make sure what she wanted to achieve.
Oh, my God. You mean non-state intervention into a societal dispute?
Do you know how many people will shoot at the sheriff when they try to repossess their house?
But they won't shoot at
nearly
the deputy.
Nearly
zero.
But they didn't
approximately
shoot the deputy.
Zero. Now, if that shifts from zero, which we might actually see soon, because like this entire money system is set for an in-breath and an out-breath, if you will.
Yeah.
So they breathe out debt, poverty, and easy money, and then they breathe in all of your property.
And your fear.
Right. Right now, we are in that breathe-in moment where they are snatching people's properties left and right, and at some point, there reaches a point where people have no ability to do anything except shoot the police. And I don't know if we're going to be able to avoid that. That would be preferable. But we might very well see the point where sheriffs stop trying to take property because they realize how dangerous it is.
Well, yeah, I think that would be where what we're talking about. Is
and
if
that
you,
would
if
and
you
that,
get to the point where the you know the people are holding up the moonshiner over the revenuer,
right
and we've been there before.
Yep.
Just think about the words I've used, moonshiner and revenuer. Mm-hmm. If we get to that point again, which I mean, it by the looks of it, the system looks very much like it's designed to gobble up everything that is owned by people who are in the bottom 90%. It looks like it's being rigged. It has been rigged that way.
Yep.
I'm not saying it has, but it sure feels
I
like
mean,
it has.
I'll say it has.
You just look like...
I mean, I can give you details if you're interested, but
no,
it
like,
absolutely is designed for that purpose.
As a person who has been employed to look at systems and work with systems, the only way you know if a system is doing its job, the thing it was engineered to do, is to look at the output of said system. Now, if you look at the output of the United States federal government, well, it is not creating a free place for people to be happy and prosperous and like, you know,
and it's
none
really
of that.
Simple. And if you just look at like, there's an old Jefferson quote, and just look up the phrase "first by inflation, then by deflation," and he talks about how people will be homeless on the continent that their fathers fought for. Yes, that is the design of our banking system.
Now I will. That's not a Jefferson quote, but it is attributed to him. But it's darn true. I mean, everything about that statement appears to be true, and I agree with you that we're there. It's just as I've heard that it's a allegorical statement or whatever the situation, whatever they call that, apocryphal. Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
So,
and anyway, I think that it's still possible. I'd love to believe, at the very least, that it is possible to employ thrift in the United States and still beat the system.
Ah.
To buy the things you need to be to buy, and you know, have success and put some money away, and you know, do all the right things, and then, like, you may very well rise to the surface.
Well, and this brings me to the other, because I said there were two. There are two ways in which we might very well see it become the easiest thing to do to just be libertarian. And one of them is the information, because we are ruled over by lies. That is just how this system works. As soon as we start knowing what's really going on. So that's the first one. The second one is money. Now, there is a way of putting aside money in a way that completely defeats their entire machinations of every banking system in the world. Bitcoin is an example of this. So's Dash, for that matter. These are ways of saving up money so effectively that the entire global control grid just can't stop it.
This is Mark calling from Studio 8424. Mark, you're on Free Talk Live.
That's correct. Je ne parle pas français un peu, and that's all I can tell you.
I love doing that. I love doing the French, like the wah-ha-ha-ha-ha, right? Because it just sounds so cool.
Yeah, it's all stuck up, right? It's like the nose action.
Yeah. But, I want to tell our listeners who aren't familiar with this other Mark. Yes, we're doing the dangerous thing. We have two Marks on Free Talk Live simultaneously. Let's hope that time doesn't warp and we don't fall into a black hole or something like that. But
it'll be Mark squared.
Mark squared. This other Mark from Studio 8424 does a rebroadcast of Free Talk Live every night, or at least as often as he can, and does it in the spirit of pirate radio, if I understand correctly. Is that right, Mark?
Yes. I run a TV and a radio internet broadcaster 24/7. And so radio8424.com, it plays from 7 to 10 p.m. every night, Free Talk Live.
Thank you for your service.
Well, you know, ever since Ian and I talked back in 2019 and 2020 about doing an LRN feed, you know, and at first he's like, well, you know, are you going to be committed? He didn't really know me that well. I'm like, well, okay, I got to prove it. Well, here it is, you know, 4 years later. But so, you know, I really enjoy the information I get from LRN and from Free Talk Live. And so what I decided to do is just go ahead and broadcast it, and I want to teach people, you know, when they call in, you know, what's the call letters of station they call from, and if they hear from Radio 8424, would they please let them know? Because we get people from across the country. I got a friend in Arizona who drives a tank. He's got one of my bumper stickers on his tank. It's kind of funny.
Wait, you have a friend in Arizona who drives a tank, like as his daily driver?
Oh, well, not a daily driver, but he owns a tank, and he has fun with it. And so, you know, he's run over cars with it and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I would just tell you the truth. I wouldn't lie to you. Trust me.
That does sound like something you could charge take a price of admission for.
Hold on, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on, Mark. I think Mark has something to say.
Sure.
Oh, I'm just amazed at the idea of driving a tank. And I hope that that tank is running over cars that they purchased for such a thing.
Police cars, actually, but that's another story.
Ah, even better. All right, Mark, 8424, what's on your mind tonight?
So I just wanted to say, you know, when people are actually driving in their car, here's the thing. They can actually open their Bluetooth car radio, and they can tune in to radio8424.com, and they can listen to Free Talk Live 7 to 10 p.m. every single night. And so I just wanted to let them know there's always a way to do it. Even if you're in a town where there isn't an affiliate, you can get Free Talk Live. You can get all the programming that we offer 24/7. And I want to expand that. So I'm always trying to get people who have programming that are, you know, libertarian, anarchist, you know, all that sort of thing,
voluntarist,
to
right.
actually be involved and get the information out there. One of the things that really got me was how hoodwinked people got in the last 4 years. And it was like programming. And I thought, well, these black rectangles people have in their pockets and on their mantles are lying to them. And so I could at least be partially responsible for getting the truth out there. So that's why I started my radio and TV stations.
Nice.
And you can do it, and I help people do it.
Be part of the solution, not part of the problem, right?
That's right. That's right. I appreciate very much Ian really giving me kind of the, I guess you might call it the kick in the ass to say, you know, let's just see what you do. And it felt good to be able to accomplish that. Mm. And, you know, you guys, it's a lot of fun. I don't get a chance to really kind of pal around all the time, but just know there's people out there that listen. And it's kind of an ebb and a flow. You get busier sometimes and stuff like that, but it's always nice to come back and listen. And it's like old friends, and it feels good. And there's a lot of good information out there. I really appreciate the, was it Shapeshift letter you had about what the dissenters that you quoted recently.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of stuff going on in crypto right now. And I'm really tired of people looking for the SEC for permission to do things. Oh, if we're going to do crypto, it needs to be anarchist.
It's so disgusting, isn't it? Like, oh, but we have to wait until our masters tell us it's okay.
Right. If you want to be a bank, go ahead and sign up for it. But if you're not going to be a bank and just do crypto, be your own bank and don't ask permission.
Let's go over here to David in San Francisco. David, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, how are you? I was also interested in the crypto topic, but it was interesting listening to the fellow before talking about the, was it Radio 8424?
Yes.
Yeah, I Googled it and I found, you know, products called 8424, but I don't find one specifically.
Try Studio 8424, perhaps? I'm not sure.
Studio.
I know he has on the Twitter and or X. I think he has both Radio 8424 and Studio 8424. I'm not sure about that 100%. I know he's on all the alternative, what we call social media sites. That would be like, you know, Mastodon and things of that nature as well. So he's really trying to increase his
podcast
stretch.
He probably described the website a little better and look it up that way.
Sure.
Yeah, it's funny. We got involved in pirate radio out here over 30 years ago,
maybe
35 years ago, when Daddy Bush was in. And there was Full Moon Radio, and then there was San Francisco Liberation Radio.
What was the one that was broadcasting from, like, I'm trying to remember the name of the island now. They like, did a movie about it, too. I can't remember what it was, but it was pirate radio station. Was it Alcatraz, even? I don't even know. But there was
he ran a if it was San Francisco Liberation Radio, actually his was legal, but it was a 10-watt station, and the FCC, you know, there were no laws if you were below 10 watts. But he was in a fairly high point, if you know about San Francisco, way out by the at the end of Geary near the Cliff House. He had a fairly high spot up there, and so he could be heard all the way down the coast into San Mateo.
Nice.
But he couldn't be heard downtown. There were, you know, the hills would block it at 10 watts. But
so it's
Full Moon Radio.
It's radio8424.com.
Oh, very nice.
Bypass the Google. In fact, never use them again.
Well, yeah, I can understand. Yeah, I'm noticing a whole bunch of old sites that I used to go to. It's very difficult to find it on Google.
And yes.
It's sad. You know, they used to be, had a reputation for being all-encompassing, but boy, they try to shut things down.
Yeah, ever since they got rid of their motto of never do evil, like, they're doing
right.
Just that.
Yeah. Well, you know, regarding Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies, you've heard of the expression full faith and credit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Back, 1776, the 13 colonies were all using, and this was before 1776, the 13 colonies were actually 13 corporations, and they each had their own company script.
Mm-hmm.
So Pennsylvania money didn't work in New Jersey. New Jersey money didn't work in New York.
What do you mean by didn't work? Like, I mean, if I'm a merchant and I'm like, you know, near the border of any of these two places, right? And somebody came to me with some of this corporate script and was like, hey, I'd like to pay you in this. Will you accept it? Don't I have the opportunity, or didn't I at that time have the opportunity to go, sure.
Well, officially, each of the 13 corporations were chartered by the king, And so each of the 13 colonies, there were more than 13 colonies, but it was the 13 colonies that seceded from the king.
Right.
And then there were many more up in Canada and, you know, around, you know, in the islands. But the
so legally, they wouldn't be able to be accepted. So, like, if you wanted to do something sort of below board, you were cool, right?
Well, there's a pretty good book that describes a lot of it. There are many, many monographs that talk about it. But there was an old history book that was common in high schools back in the 1940s and 50s mm-hmm. called The Origins of the American Revolution. And you can still find it in the in yard sales and whatnot. But it describes how the problems of having 13 different types of money systems and the values of each of them were based upon whatever the local corporate, you know, management.
Well, and the problem is that you have any system that is done by force. I mean, you said yourself that these were commanded by the king to operate in this way. So it wasn't a question of, do I want to accept this? It was a question of, I will be put in jail if I accepted Pennsylvania currency in New Jersey.
We have long supported the idea of money for the people. I don't think Bitcoin is that anymore. I think that personally, I don't think once Bitcoin went with the small block direction with Lightning and all that stuff, that many people who wanted money for the people, money that was not manipulated, that they went, you know, to other currencies for whatever reason. Now, right. Has that gone well as far as price? No.
And real quick, I just want to mention Roger Ver's book that I mentioned earlier is called Hijacking Bitcoin, The Hidden History of BTC. So if people want to find out about the small block thing that you just mentioned, that is actually available on Amazon and some other places right now. Roger Ver himself penned this book. So anyway, go ahead, Mark.
Yep, that's just it, is that, you know, Bitcoin isn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's a modern commodity. I think it's a newly made commodity. But the reason that Bitcoin is being successful is we're being robbed and have been being robbed by people who control the money for hundreds of years.
Government.
And the desire to stop that is the reason that Bitcoin's successful.
So
I'm out here in San Francisco, a little north of Silicon Valley, and as legend goes, Bitcoin and some of the cryptocurrencies were developed because Wall Street was not investing in the inventors of Silicon Valley.
No, that's not quite true. It came about from the cypherpunks getting together after the collapse of 2008, when the banking industry decided to basically commit fraud against the real estate market. And like everybody like stole a bunch of money and was a bunch of thieves, but like nobody went to jail
don't disagree. Yeah,
right.
I don't disagree. But if I understand right, the crypto was existing before that. And it was
mistaken.
People who were they couldn't get even here in San Francisco. We had the West Coast Wall Street, you know, in the financial district, and some of them would invest in Silicon Valley, but they didn't have comparison. So they couldn't convince the old boys to invest in the new technology. And so the legend goes that they were at least investing among themselves to create the crypto to allow these inventions.
Noxious propaganda.
Yeah, to some extent, I get where you might have these ideas and say the words that you've said, because cryptography has been around for a long time, right? The American government has been using cryptography just to, you know, keep codes and messages secret for a long time and that kind of a thing. There has also been many attempts to make what we'll call digital money over the course of time, but it wasn't until after 2008 when the cypherpunks got together that they solved the Byzantine general's problem. This was a thing that no other, we'll call it cryptographic or digital currency, anything else. They had many versions. Like, people would always propose things to the government and the Federal Reserve that were, you might think were similar to Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, but weren't. Because none of them could ever solve the double spend problem, and that's the Byzantine general's problem. Where if you have this digital currency, somebody could like take over and like double spend coins that you've already spent and get the value from it. None of them could solve that problem until the whole Wall Street collapse, right? All that happened. The 2008 stock market took a dump, and it was because of the real estate, and all the banks got bailed out at the taxpayer expense, too big to fail, right? All of that happened. So it was the cypherpunks who got together, and of course, Satoshi Nakamoto being one of the cypherpunks got together, and they were able to sew together multiple technologies to solve the Byzantine general's problem of double spending, and that's where the white paper for Bitcoin came from. And so, of course, it spawned a market now of literally thousands of cryptocurrencies that are on the market today.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.